Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Tonight, I have a special part two interview for you with Oxford scholar and Giza Death Star book series author, Dr. Joseph Farrell. In this special episode, we'll go deep on the JFK assassination and its connection to paperclip scientists, NASA, Antarctica, and the UFO file. After 60 years, we'll find ourselves face to face with the shattering truth that President Kennedy was about to make an announcement about space that would change everything. Please join us now. We crisscrossed with Tesla because you've covered it in the final Giza Death Star book and in this Demon in the Acre. Tesla comes up again in our explorations around the UFO file.
Yes.
And there's a series of things you wrote in a book about covert wars. Uh-huh. And this is a fascinating book. It's Covert Wars and the Clash of Civilizations. It's the follow-up to the Breakaway book. And those two books, I think, are just remarkable because of how they have so much locked in there that will roll out over the next 5 or 10 years.
Right.
But what I'm seeing now in there, when I go back and look at your reports about the early interactions of planes chasing the UFOs, and then we get into the story of the pilot, Mantell. Who kept going, and basically, you know, there are stories, there are other sources besides the two pilots that they silenced who were with him,
right,
that something happened to that plane to take it down.
Yes.
And as if the thing that he was following, this huge metallic UFO, was giving a signal, don't send fighters directly at us.
There's a lot about the Mantell case that, for one thing, I'm not satisfied that the explanations, the standard narrative explanations, are true.
Mm-hmm.
I do think something extraordinary happened to Captain Mantell. I think it was so extraordinary the Air Force had to silence the other pilots. But there's a lot about that case that there's two things in particular about it that bothers me. Firstly, the timing of the case itself occurs in the same time frame as President Truman allegedly gave his shoot down order.
Oh, right. Yes.
And with that pursuit, Mantell was in basically a P-51 fighter, a prop-driven fighter. That whole pursuit suggests to me that he was part of an operation to shoot down something.
Right.
And the breakup of the plane, we have never been informed whether or not his weapons systems were used.
Mm.
In other words, did he actually fire at that craft? And if so, did that thing that he was chasing, whatever it was, and I know, folks, I don't believe it was a weather balloon, and I don't believe it was Venus,
right?
you know, to take qualified pilots, he was a wing leader, you know, so to take a qualified pilot and say that this guy doesn't know the difference between a weather balloon or Venus, and is trying to chase either one with a P-51 prop aircraft. No,
absolutely not.
That doesn't add up for me. So the first thing I've never been able to find, and I don't think anyone has even bothered to ask, is whether or not his weapons were hot and if they had been used.
Interesting.
I don't think anyone has ever asked the question. To me, that's the all-important question, given the time frame of Truman's shoot down order, given the time frame that, if I remember, Mantell was in 1950-51. So in other words, you're in that 5-year time frame from Kenneth Arnold and Roswell up to the 1952 UFO flap over Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So That's a hot period for UFOs.
It's a very visible battle going on.
It's a very visible battle. Yeah, exactly. And Truman is well apprised of it and has given his shoot down order.
Right.
So, you know, I have to wonder exactly what's going on with Mantell. The other problem about Mantell and that whole episode is from the descriptions of the debris of his aircraft. You know, that was a solid aircraft. I mean, the P-51 was a really good little prop fighter plane. It was a very, very solid aircraft. Well, the descriptions of this aircraft on the ground sound to me like it literally just kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And this is not an aircraft known to fall apart. Mm-hmm. You know, it was capable of very high G maneuvers. You know, it was a combat aircraft against the very best the Luftwaffe could throw at us in World War II. It was a sturdy aircraft. So the description of the debris from Mantell's aircraft has never satisfied me that they've come up with anything like remotely like an explanation that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you the thing that I think of whenever I think of Mantell, and this may surprise a lot of people, and that's American Airlines Flight 191.
Oh, right.
The DC-10 that crashed on takeoff at O'Hare Airport in 1979. Mm-hmm. Because what happened with that aircraft is, of course, it lost the left engine on the left wing during its takeoff. The left engine pulled out a bunch of the hydraulics and kept the plane in that orientation so that it just absolutely literally flew into the ground.
Unbelievable.
It was horrid. You know, everybody on board lost their life in a flight that lasted all of 5 minutes. You know, just awful.
Amazing.
The explanation that the air traffic national accident board or whatever, I can't remember the name of it, gave us was that the craft was serviced at the McDonnell Douglas hangar in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then was flown to O'Hare, and it was part of that Chicago, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Los Angeles flight that American used to have. And that the engine had been removed and reinstalled on the aircraft improperly.
Oh, wow.
And that that's what caused the accident. And it was either that they removed the entire engine pylon or that they were not supposed to remove the pylon, but one of the two. Now, servicing a jet aircraft engine, whether you remove the pylon or don't remove the pylon, putting it back is not going to, for any competent mechanic, is not going to cause the whole engine to come off. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're blaming it on the mechanics at McDonnell Douglas's headquarters, you know, their
right.
Operational service. This makes no sense to me. So there, in my opinion, is another explanation of why that engine came off. The aircraft is falling apart like Mantell. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an essay years and years ago about that crash, about Flight 191, because Farrell House, one of my publishers, published a book called Secret and Suppressed, in which they argue a man that was acquainted with a technology, an acoustic technology for the Siemens company. Here we go, Nazi International Fund folks, was involved in using that technology to bring that aircraft down on behalf of Airbus, which was just getting up and started and did not want the competition from McDonnell Douglas. That's his explanation. And if you look at Mantell's aircraft, to me, that aircraft looks like it might literally have been vibrated apart, that some sort of acoustic weapon hit it.
Incredible.
Or that it encountered some sort of turbulence that that literally shook it apart. That's what that aircraft looks like to me.
Incredible.
It has that Flight 191, you know, engine suddenly flying off because the mechanics were stupid. You know, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Doesn't seem likely somehow.
Doesn't seem likely, no.
One of the sources that you're citing when you're talking about Mantell in this book is this British writer, Wilkins.
Yes.
And he talks about how there was a lot of rumor that it was hit by a ray.
Yes.
And I find it interesting with the timeline of what's happening in 43 with the death of Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
And they send in John Trump to review those records. And we know he's the uncle of President Trump.
Yes.
And it's Vannevar Bush who runs the UFO file, sends him in, and says...
Sends him in.
Yeah.
Well, let's remember that Tesla is... Tesla's whole wireless power technology is an electroacoustic pulsed technology.
Right.
Going back to the Giza thing again.
Yes.
But the other thing that I find very interesting, and Tesla himself is in his Colorado Springs notes talking about standing waves. Okay. Well, right. There's another guy, in addition to Wilkins, there's another guy who is writing about the very same phenomenon in the time frame of the Mantell crash. In fact, if my memory serves me correctly, he actually mentions the Mantell crash in his book as being a possible example of what standing waves, columnar standing waves in the atmosphere could do. And that's Morris Jessup.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If you have a standing wave in a column of air, if you can configure it right, that standing wave is going to be as solid as a rock. Mm-hmm. And it's also going to be completely invisible.
Wow. So there, it's going to literally look like, bang, they hit something and you won't see anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what does that standing wave do? Well, it sets up a permanent lattice structure at the nodes of interference for all the where all the waveforms intersect and interfere. That's a node. It's basically creating an invisible crystal. So yeah, you know, this stuff is not new. People have been thinking about it for a long time. And Mantell, you know, the thing about it that bothers me about Mantell is, first of all, the aircraft looks this way, and secondly, the Air Force comes in and shuts everybody up.
Yes.
Why? Well,
the records themselves for the case weren't released till the mid-80s.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That is very suspicious.
That's very, very suspicious.
Yeah.
You know, long after people have forgotten about Captain Mantell, now we're going to release the records.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
You know, again, why?
Yeah.
You know, there. You don't keep records like that for that long unless there's something going on with the case. I'm sorry. I don't think the government is that inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that it suggests to me is they released it after they were certain of the principle involved, and that they released it because they want us to know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just keep it locked up forever.
Otherwise, just keep it locked up forever.
Yeah. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I think the Mantell thing represents a chain of different pilot incidents. It's like an archetype, you know, for this particular thing. And you see it happen over and over again.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
And the other thing that Mantell, I really think of him as the first in that arc of pilot UFO encounters.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the timeline, the sequence of the timeline following Mantell, you've got the Kinross case over the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that weird case a few years later down in Puerto Rico. So in other words, they seem to come in these more or less regularly timed incidents. Mm-hmm. And they're all very similar. They're in a chase. They're trying to chase down a UFO or a radar blip. You know, like in the Washington, D.C. UFO flap. It's one of these two things.
Well, that's fascinating. I think I go back to Corso, who, when they asked him, what were you doing in your briefings? You know, you say you briefed President Kennedy and his brother on the UFO file. And he said, well, you know, they wanted every little detail that we had on what was going on with the materials and everything else. He said, but one of the things that they were vested in was constructing and using the X-15 that Walter Dornberger had made for chasing UFOs. In fact, Corso said it was designed to chase
UFOs. To chase them. Yeah, that whole X-15, the original dinosaur space shuttle project.
Blue Gemini.
Yeah, all of that stuff, I think, has a direct UFO connection. Mm-hmm. And I also think that there is, again, a hidden Nazi aspect to that technology that, again, they don't want out. Right. One of the key factors there is that Walter Lippisch, the German ramjet scientist, was one of those paperclip scientists at Dayton, Ohio, at the Air Technical Intelligence Command. And Dr. Lippisch is an unusual guy because he maintained adamantly, after he arrived over here, that the sound barrier was broken by a Nazi ramjet in about 1944. Forget about Chuck Yeager.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm not surprised that they would have thought of this as a UFO chase device, because the other thing about the X-15 aircraft was that it was an extremely high altitude aircraft. In other words, it was capable. I think
it's space plane. In fact,
well, yeah, quite literally, it would ascend. You know, they would release it from a bomber, but it would actually ascend to about 115,000 to 120,000 feet, which was, you know, way beyond the ceiling of Captain Mantell or any prop driven, or even for that matter, jet aircraft of the time. So the X-15, yeah, it had an extraordinarily high ceiling. And the other thing I think that they were doing with the X-15, because of that extraordinarily high ceiling, is they're also doing the basic aerodynamic testing for the U-2 and then eventually the SR-71 Blackbird, because they fly at those extremely high altitudes.
Incredible. Yes.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fascinating. And it reminds me, because in your Covert Wars book, there's a section about the Soviets and the Americans both becoming aware of a second orbital satellite beyond the things that they were sending out. So there's something out there.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, at a certain point, their own satellites are getting turned off, and they're like, who's doing that? And if it was meteor stuff, who's repairing it? So they're already looking in that period at somebody else operating in the space.
Well, it's not only – I think it was one of the Telstar satellites. Not only were we having some of our satellites turned off, but in one case it was turned off for about 6 months and then turned back on.
It's like, oh, we're done with it.
We're done.
You can have it back now.
Yeah. You know, it's like that Mars rover. Remember that? You know,
yes.
The rover suddenly died. Oh, well, it was a dust storm. And then all of a sudden, months later, it starts up again. You know, so Marvin the Martian came by with some Windex and paper towels and cleaned it for us, you know. It's weird. If we're being told the truth that they didn't turn it off themselves, this whole thing of another satellite in the 60s, the so-called Black Knight satellite.
Right.
The thing about it that has fascinated me was it's in polar orbit.
Right.
At that time, neither the United States nor the Soviet Union were capable of putting things into a polar orbit. You know, that took a few more years before they were able to do that. Plus, what I have heard, Daniel, is the dimensions of the so-called Black Knight satellite, if, again, any of this is true, is that this thing is big.
Mm-hmm.
It's, in other words, way beyond the capability that the Soviet Union or the United States had at that time to boost into space. It's an enormous satellite. It's physically big, and it weighs a lot, apparently. So, you know, what that thing is doing in a polar orbit and who put it there, you know, the all important question.
It's a gigantic probe. It's a space probe.
It would have to be something like that. But in a polar orbit, you know, why a polar orbit? That's the other thing.
And yeah.
if it's polar, yeah. The really interesting thing on the planet ain't at the North Pole.
Right. Let's get clear. It's Antarctica.
Yeah, it's Antarctica. Yeah.
Now, and what's interesting?
Needs to be washed down there. Anyway, go ahead.
No, that's the real point. It's fascinating with Antarctica because when you get into that period of time, mm-hmm. there is the International Geophysical Year, yep. which we did an episode on it, and we're preparing to release a lot of information about this, which I want to get your opinion on when we put it out. But IGY is fascinating because at the behest of Lloyd Berkner, who had just headed up the Robertson panel, and there's some other interesting things about Berkner. For example, he went for 2 years with Admiral Byrd over to Antarctica between 1928 and 1930.
I did not know that.
Yeah, set up Little America radio station there.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that interesting? So Berkner shows up in this strange way, and then he's saying, well, let's do International Geophysical Year with the Russians, and we'll all go around to Antarctica and check out what's going on.
And blow up A-bombs.
This, Joseph, when I saw your 1960 reference in your book, to the satellite that is out there that both the Russians and the Americans are looking at and saying, what's that? I started to think, hey, the beginning of that survey is the IGY, and that's the reason for it.
Oh, that could very well be. It makes, wow, yeah.
We're getting to strange territory there.
It raises the question, are they trying to take the satellite out? Are they trying to interfere with communications? And the other question I have is with regard to that speculation, is exactly what kind of radio station did he set up down there in the 1930s? Mm. Is this one of these automated weather stations? What kind of radio? Is this a shortwave station, or is this, you know, an FM or AM transmitter transmitting to somebody in the local neighborhood? Or is it just a receiver?
Yes.
You know, what's going on with this?
Now, this is getting into very interesting territory. There's two things in here that I think are fascinating. One, that one of the people in America, in Maryland, there's two people in the entire country who officially pick up his broadcast. One of them is a kid in a garage with his own radio set picking up signals from Antarctica.
Well, that's got to be shortwave then.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing to put on the record about Berkner, of course, is that he is who President Kennedy is going to meet at the Trade Mart. Mm-hmm. And his famous last speech, which nobody ever learns about or finds out about, is with Berkner. And the only thing we know about it is that they arranged for this flag that was over the White House for Kennedy to give to Berkner at the ceremony. That was one they were going to helicopter it in. And Kennedy was adamant that they use a flag that was flown over the White House. That's very interesting. And then in Berkner's notes, he says, we are going to have international staggering implications from our speech today. That's it.
And that's all we know.
Well, the Johnson administration sits on the letter of the speech for 5 years, and then they release this thing, and it's like, it doesn't sound like Kennedy at all. It's like, we need to build up our nuclear forces, you know, and supposedly that was it. They released it 5 years later? Come on.
And that's supposed to be the text of his speech.
It is.
No.
No way. So Berkner was waiting at the Trade Mart. In fact, I found out later that part of the motorcade went directly to the Trade Mart. They show up there. They know nothing about the assassination. And Berkner's waiting for the whole ceremony. So something was going on at the Trade Mart, and Berkner was right in the heart of it, but he'd headed up the Robertson panel. So he's got the UFO connection, and he's got the Antarctica connection.
And Kennedy wanted the exact flag from the White House helicoptered in.
Yes, that's on the record. What does that tell you?
Well, yeah, if they're going to have a speech and it's going to create a major international sensation, you've got this guy setting up a shortwave transmitter in Antarctica. Mm-hmm. There's too much going on here.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's definitely UFO related, and therefore it may be something to do with that satellite, you know, in polar orbit, mm-hmm. not geosynchronous, polar orbit, because that will take it over Antarctica. And
that's fascinating.
It's got something to do with Antarctica.
And International Geophysical Year.
Geophysical Year.
Taking the
Antarctica's international. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something they were planning to disclose something, it sounds like to me, with respect to Antarctica or possible plans for Antarctica. Something going on down there. I mean, you and I talked before the recording about the most recent Chinese thing.
Yes.
And, you know, the Chinese sending two icebreakers and a cargo ship and 460 people to construct their fifth research station. 460 people.
Incredible.
You know, that's quite a construction gang.
Yeah.
especially for Antarctica. So, yeah, something very weird going on. I mean, you and I both know. Antarctica has this endless list of strangeness.
Yes.
The people associated with it, the goings on, and I'm convinced from those clues that I put out in the Hess mess, the Hess and the Penguins, that Antarctica for some reason was front and center in those conversations taking place between Hess and the British. After his flight to Great Britain. I mean, it's
very strange.
It's all very, very strange.
Yeah.
Something very weird going on down there.
Well, the Nazis were on the spot with it. They were on the spot.
Yeah.
They enlisted the help of Byrd.
Yep, they did.
To help get them situated about how they could do it. He decided not to go with them, but he went over there to tell them how to do it.
Right.
Before we were at war, of course.
Yep.
Byrd is interesting because there's so many Byrd footprints around the Kennedy assassination, and it's sitting there as a gigantic question mark, including the fact that Admiral Byrd's cousin, D.H. Byrd, owned the Texas School Book Depository.
Well, to me, it means in addition to a UFO connection, you've got an Antarctica connection.
Yeah.
I mean, and what that is and why it's there, you know, we can guess all, you know, for that matter. It raises the whole question of why Secretary John Kerry went to Antarctica in the middle of a diplomatic junket in 2016.
Right.
And we're told it was because he was interested to see the climate.
he wouldn't miss his Botox session for that. No.
John Kerry? No. No. I'm sorry. it was part of a diplomatic mission.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the way I think it should be read. He went there for some diplomatic purpose. Was it to meet secretly with another world leader?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only other world leader that's been down there was the Patriarch of Moscow, for crying out loud.
Right. Yeah, there's that U.S.-Russian...
Yeah,
peace again. And,
it's just none of this makes any sense. And now in Antarctica, to me, it's very telling that of all the presences on Antarctica, including the Nazi one, the most weird of them all is Raytheon. What in the name of sense are they doing there?
Yes.
And Why is everybody so interested all of a sudden in detecting neutrinos down there?
Right.
And on it goes.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And of course, Vannevar Bush, the founder of Raytheon. So he's
yep.
Yeah. They've got the roots there, the incredible roots. One of the things you wrote about in relation to Richard Bissell, and of course, when we get around the Kennedy assassination, we've got the 60th anniversary right here in just a couple of weeks. When you get around the Kennedy assassination, you don't know so much about Bissell in the UFO file. It's dramatic. But one of the things that you mentioned is that they actually did a UFO simulation called Hummingbird. I found that interesting. And when I think about Bissell and his unusual stature there in the intelligence world, it seems to me that that shepherding of the UFO file in the Kennedy administration and who's keeping it out of Kennedy's hands directly is that Dulles Bissell connection.
Oh, absolutely. If there's one character in the CIA at that time that would have access to the UFO file and have the juice to keep it away from Kennedy, it would be Bissell.
Mm-hmm.
Much more than Alan Dulles.
Mm-hmm.
Bissell basically is the one that has his finger into those technological pies.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess would be Bissell. So, yeah. I would probably go so far as to say if there's anyone in that whole Kennedy era CIA staff that would be aware not only of UFO file but any strange goings on at Antarctica, again, Richard Bissell. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's very interesting. When we look at characters like Bissell, who's deeply involved on the UFO side and on the intelligence side, when we get to the records that are kept of President Kennedy and the assassination now 60 years later, and the CIA and the Biden administration announced, we're just not going to release any more records.
And recently I did a presentation for an upcoming documentary on Blue. And what's going on here is a description of the CIA role and the Forrestal role. Let's listen to this about 10 minutes and then come back.
The problem with the National Security Act, they needed something to prevent all the spying and everything that was going on, mm-hmm. but they went too far. And the CIA, if you look at the setup of the CIA, you have two organizations. One of them is the OPC, which it has this incredibly innocuous title. It's the Office of Policy Coordination. But these guys blow up trains, you know, rig elections, and they do assassinations. I mean, so yeah, like policy coordination, indeed.
What a nice title.
Really is. The OPC is that function inside of the national security structure that starts to operate outside of constitutionality. And then the CIA gets memos from President Truman saying, get this OPC thing under control. You know, they're going over to Italy, and yeah, we want help with the election so the communists don't get in, but they're like, you know, completely fixing the election. And it's fascinating because he's sending them memos to get the OPC under control. And what happens is the OP merges into the CIA. Hmm. And when they merge into the CIA, they become the dominant factor. So instead of the CIA gathering intelligence for the president the way that Truman originally decided this was to be done, suddenly we're in a totally different ballgame. And the guys who like to overthrow governments, the guys who, you know, if you're against them politically, will assassinate you, mm-hmm. those guys get in power inside of that structure. So when President Kennedy comes in, his first thing that he says is, I can't believe the amount of power the CIA has over the presidency. This is ridiculous. And he's quoted by Arthur Schlesinger as saying, I'm going to take the CIA and smash it into 1,000 pieces. So you can see instantly that that covert world is looking at this guy who's come in, who's a millionaire, you know, and they think, here's this lightweight playboy. And, you know, he thinks that he's going to change all the things that we've been laying out in terms of the rule of the world since World War II. And so it's that structure that turns on him. And it's about 3 years of President Kennedy's
presidency. That's all he has. Mm-hmm. And most of that is fighting with the CIA and the different things that they're doing. So when he leaves, we're in the Vietnam War. You know, we have the Cuban Missile Crisis, and they want him to go in and bomb Cuba. So Kennedy is, he's already developed quite an enemies list on the CIA side. So therefore, when you get into the situation where the public's looking for disclosure so many years later, the CIA is the obvious place to go, but they're the ones who've kept the records back.
At the same time.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So it leaves us in a very a tricky situation, and it goes back all the way back to the Kennedy era. Oddly enough.
Yeah.
And Kennedy is weird on that because he has a lot of UFO connections long before he goes into the White House. So James Forrestal is the first National Defense Secretary. He is his close friend. He takes him to Berlin after the war when he's 28-year-old journalist. And what's fascinating for me is they're both Catholic and they're best friends. And he, Forrestal runs MJ-12, which is, you know, overseeing UFO secrecy for the government. He ends up getting thrown out of a window at Bethesda Hospital.
Oh my gosh.
This is defense secretary. And Kennedy is his best friend. When Kennedy gets into the White House, he does a very interesting thing. He goes and visits the grave of Forrestal, and he has a photographer come with him to take pictures of him at the grave of his friend Forrestal. And we can take a look at that picture right now.
Yeah.
Von Braun and JFK, that is 10 days before JFK's assassination. And he's there with the head of our rocket program, Von Braun, who is the leader of the paperclip group.
Yeah.
Very strange indeed, but quite a picture for the ages.
Yeah.
And not one that they traditionally show when it comes to the Kennedy specials and things. They don't want to deal with paperclip.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Interestingly enough, there is more and more coming out in terms of, you know, they keep the documents around the Kennedy thing. But in other ways, documents are coming forward that suggest, oh, you know, there were people who were around in this period, right around the assassination, and they kept their records sealed tight for 60 years. And now some of that stuff comes out around the Kennedy thing, and you start to connect the dots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our government hearings on UAP leading to public disclosure of hidden technologies, or is it a part of an ongoing cover-up?
Yeah, I don't think it's interesting with the committees. I'm glad that they have UFO committees, but it doesn't seem to me that they're leading in any direction. They seem to be saying, oh, we don't know what it is, but give us more money to fight this threat, this potential menace from outer space. You know, it's interesting, during the Trump administration, they had the Space Force, and people still don't understand how remarkable it is that we got this thing, because it's very strange to get the Space Force at this point in time. All these other presidents didn't do it. And then you look at somebody like Trump and you're like, why the Space Force? Like, what is this about? And we spend billions of dollars on it every year. They already had various space missions and departments that handled space. So what was this about? But I think when you track through these different periods, it happens with Reagan in the 80s with SDI and Star Wars. It happens later within the late Clinton administration. He's having meetings with Lawrence Rockefeller. And Lawrence Rockefeller is very openly, he supports UFO researchers. So he's very, you know, he's the odd Rockefeller. He's the guy who wants to fund the wild stuff. But what's interesting to me is it seems like on a presidential level, since Kennedy, they understand there has to be something done to pull the UFO information back under the executive branch. So Kennedy here, 10 days before his assassination, he sends a memo saying, I want to share this. And you can look at the memo. It's a publicly available document. It's not anything secret. And it says, I want to share our UFO file with the Russians, and we're going to do this joint moon mission. And when you look at that and you think about, you know, what they'd been doing there with the tension at NASA with the paperclip scientist, and then you say he's trying to communicate with Khrushchev at that period of time, and they have all these blocks against him doing it. So what Kennedy does is something very unusual. Maybe he learned it from his dad or something. But he starts to develop a human intelligence network. So this guy is in a cafe. He's reading a newspaper in Washington, D.C. He represents President Kennedy. Someone comes in and puts something into his newspaper, and it is a message directly to bring over to West Berlin. The guy takes a plane to West Berlin, and then from West Berlin, he goes to Moscow. From Moscow, he meets with a Khrushchev representative. Khrushchev's representative gets the message, goes back, and this is how they're doing diplomacy. There's no State Department, there's no CIA, there's nothing. So I think when they were looking at Kennedy on this, they were thinking, he wants to share this exotic technology through the UFO file, and he has his own secret network of communicating back and forth. This is outside of everything that we've developed. By the way, the guy wants to destroy and dismantle the CIA. So I think at that point he becomes too much of a problem for the national security state. And I think that's how we ended up here. And so when they have the hearings now in 2023 about UFO, UAP, and they're saying, oh, we're trying to get that disclosure for you. If they don't deal with Kennedy's effort 60 years ago and the fact that he, you know, one of the factors in his removal, and in the animosity from the intelligence agencies is over this aspect of the hidden technology, then we have a situation which you'll never get any kind of answer. And all you'll get is, oh, you know, we need to fund all this money and bloat the Defense Department even bigger because there's some anomalous threat and we can't tell you exactly what it is. So,
yeah.
That is the nature of the situation. And it doesn't sound like, you know, free world media in 2023, but there you are.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, that is for Blue, which is the documentary we're doing on this. It's coming out in early 2024. Now, going back to you, Joseph, and what you think of all this.
And we have the curious references from Napolitano, as we've discussed on this program, talking to President Trump before he leaves office and saying, release the records, and Trump saying, you know, you wouldn't believe what's in there, basically. If you were me, you couldn't do it either. So there's something in the records that relates directly to the heart of what we're talking about, which is the secrecy around the UFO file, this Antarctica project, and the presence of the deep state and the assassination.
Well, I suspect that it also, you know, that Buzz Aldrin, if those remarks that were attributed to him after his own little big vacation to Antarctica are true, you know, whatever he said was something to the effect, well, this is just pure evil.
Right.
If all of this is true, then there is a cover up of something going on down there. And for that matter of someone.
Yes.
The only thing that can come that comes to my mind is a very strange picture in Dante's Inferno, where if you read the whole poem, at the end he gets all the way down to the very pit of hell, and Satan is there in the center of that pit, but he's encased in ice.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Very weird.
And even weirder, you know, everybody thinks that Dante is recreating the cosmology of Thomas Aquinas in the Divine Comedy. But I guarantee you that it's not part of Thomas Aquinas's cosmology that Dante and Virgil crawl their way up out of hell by climbing up Satan's back.
Wow.
And you know, that whole imagery.
Fascinating.
in addition to Lucifer being encased in ice.
But Dante's Inferno, it is a mystery text.
Totally. What's his name? Booth is the British guy that wrote a book about Dante's involvement in a secret society in Florence.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he has not released the book in book form. It's only an ebook. And you know me, I just, if you're gonna be able to write something and footnote it, please give it to me in a format that will remain consistent.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, Dante, yeah, is another one of these mystery, in my opinion, definitely yeah. qualifies as somebody that's is got some connection to a secret society or mystery school somewhere in Florence in the early Renaissance. You betcha.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, William Blake is another one who shows up for
me. Oh, William Blake. Yeah. William Blake, Percy Shelley.
Yeah.
Charles Darwin's grandfather, you know, all of these people have some connection with it.
Yes. Absolutely. Incredible. The final thing on the Kennedy assassination piece, which is, and it's the part that's not brought forward, and you certainly did in your LBJ book, but it is the paperclip NASA aspect in relation. The other person, I guess, is the deceased Ken Thomas, who passed away yeah. recently, but he spent some time on it, and he got the Torbit document into a form yeah. out to everyone. And so that's remarkable that he was able to do that. But Joseph, just to sum up the paperclip battle versus Kennedy over NASA and the secret space program.
Well, I think, the other person that mentions the paperclip connection to Kennedy, and really the first one to do so, and to do it in a way that just could not be denied, was May Brussel.
Oh, yes.
Beyond, you know, even for the time that she did it, her research at the time seemed just absolutely incredible. But basically anybody who's peered into that whole Nazi connection to the Kennedy assassination has verified it one way or another in some form or fashion.
Yeah,
and she was the first, you know, kudos to her for having the guts to put all that out there when she did, because
she was so ahead of the curve.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. Paris Flamand, another one that hinted at it because he had been friends with her. But the Kennedy Nazi paperclip connection, I think, comes home in a number of ways with the choice of weapons that were mentioned after the assassination, the Mauser being a special kind of Mauser that the company made specifically for Argentina.
Right.
And then the change to a 6.5 Mannlicher or Carcano. In other words, weapons of two Axis powers, one of which sold them to another sort of quasi Axis power in Argentina.
Yes.
There's that. The whole Torbit document thing, as you mentioned, and the connection to the Garrison investigation. Permandex, the company, and its, or Centro Mondiale Commerciale, as it was known in its Jim Garrison Italian iteration. The connection in turn of that corporation to some very murky mafia connections, like the Bronfmans of all people.
Wow, yeah.
you know, just over and over again.
Yeah.
The Ferenc Nagy, the fascist Hungarian prime minister, who some people say is the umbrella man at Dealey
Plaza. Right, because he's in Dallas during the assassination.
He's in Dallas during the assassination.
Major fascist figure.
Major. Oh yeah. Hugely. Holy moly, you better believe it. He was, if I remember correctly, he had some sort of cabinet position in Admiral Horthy's government. So, yeah, major fascist guy.
That would do it.
Yeah. That would do it. You've got the Hunts and the Murchisons with their connection to West German intelligence, you know, that Professor Scott has brought out in a couple of his books. So, yeah, the Nazi fingerprints are all over it. And then if you really want to get into Nazi esoterica with regard to the K Kennedy assassination, get a hold of a book by Mikhail Lebedev, a very rare book. And it's a fictional book, but it was published in Great Britain in the late 1960s, where the author is basically letting out how he was recruited by Martin Bormann to kill Kennedy. It's not a very well-known book, but and it's a
that's
book
Treason for My Daily Bread.
Treason for My Daily
you
Bread.
You put that one on the map. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's not known at all because it was brought out by a British publisher with one of those, you know, introductions that says this is the story that was told and this is you know, and we're just putting it out there. It's a bizarre story.
It is. And what's interesting is you put on the record that there's a news article about Martin Bormann signing a check.
Yeah.
In the 1960s.
Well, it wasn't me that put that out. It was Ladislaus Fargo.
Right.
The journalist who, you know, wrote The Game of Foxes and all of these other, you know, very serious. Well, he put out a book, a nonfiction book called The Fourth Reich or something like that. All about the post-war Nazis in Argentina. And he writes about a CBS journalist, and I forget right off the top of my head what the CBS journalist's name was, because he also wrote a book about Martin Bormann.
Oh, right.
That got Ladislaus Fargo to go down and investigate. Well, the CBS journalist was the one who was an associate of Ed Murrow. So in other words, we're not talking, you know, a little CBS cub reporter at some affiliate. No, we're talking, you know, at the national headquarters. He's the one that discovered that Martin Bormann had cashed a check for $2 million in 1963.
Amazing.
Drawn on National Hanover, cleared through Chase Manhattan and through the Buenos Aires branch of Deutsche Bank over his own signature.
Fascinating.
You know,
so, he didn't die in the war, people.
I mean, come on. what bank cashes a check with Martin Bormann's signature? I mean, it doesn't matter if the signature is real or not at this point, you know. Right. But someone did.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's just total. It's just, you know. So I suspect that for whatever reason that if they're sitting on something with respect to the Kennedy assassination, that, and we can't let it out because, you know, like Trump said, we just can't. Mm-hmm. It's got something to do with Antarctica, and it probably also has something to do with Nazis.
Yeah.
There's just no other way I can think of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. You know, that's a wow.
Yeah. It's interesting because the presence of Walter Dornberger in the Oswald story.
Yeah.
As, you know, Michael Payne's mentor at Bell Helicopter.
Yeah.
And Oswald coming back from Russia, staying with the Paynes.
Yes.
He and his wife, and then all of the evidence implicating him coming out of the Payne household, who's directly connected to Dornberger. That is, you know, and we've gone through Dornberger's history before. He was the boss of Von Braun.
Oh, yes.
And he's down there at Bell Helicopter, Bell Aerospace, you know, concocting this identity for himself, this new identity. So for me, when you look at that, you can see the fingerprints of Paperclip probably the most up close there.
Well, let's not forget something else about Oswald and about the Nazis, the NASA Nazis at that specific time. Oswald, prior to going over to the Soviet Union, and I point this out in the LBJ Kennedy book, Oswald was heard by some of his Marine buddies not only speaking Russian, but another language, German.
Ah, yeah.
And in Oswald's diary, that became part of the evidence against him, in his diary, he had the phone number of George Lincoln Rockwell.
American Nazi Party.
The American Nazi Party head. Yeah. You know, I grew up, he was alive when I was a boy. I remember this creep.
Yeah. Yeah. He died suspiciously, too.
You bet he did. Yeah, he did. But anyway, yeah, so you've got that.
And then that's fascinating. Oswald's landlady had him talking in both Russian and German.
In German.
Yeah.
Yeah. German? You know, why?
Well, haven't figured out that part of the story.
Well, my suspicion has always been that the people that had the boots on the ground inside the Soviet Union at that time that could have been capable of running him and then getting him out of the Soviet Union with the daughter of a GRU colonel in tow as his wife was the Galen Network.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not the CIA running this guy hands-on. It's Galen and his people.
That's why you get the Harry Truman editorial. Well,
Galen has what? The direct connection to Hunt and Murchison because Galen is their private intelligence network.
All right.
He's the one telling them, get the heck out of Texas. Go down to your dacha in Mexico until the whole thing cools off. The other thing that's going on at the time of the assassination, and this again, I think the Torbett document picks up on this aspect of the infighting going on between Kennedy and his NASA director, James Webb, and the paperclip Nazis, is that Artur Rudolph, the guy that designs the Saturn V, folks, in other words, our Nazi German moon rocket. this guy is, and the other German scientists are really having a problem in NASA. And the problem is they are impatient. They hate the American contracting, bidding nonsense with the defense contractors. They just want to go ahead and build all of this stuff and get going.
Right.
So there was a movement amongst these paperclip Nazis to build all of those rockets by themselves in-house.
Incredible.
Not through Boeing, not through Raytheon, not through Lockheed Martin. Just let us do it. We can do it, and we can get it done quickly.
Wow. Paperclip NASA right there.
Yeah, Paperclip NASA. Artur Rudolph was the one that was leading that charge, the guy that eventually did build the Saturn V. He just wanted to do it all in-house.
Wow.
You know? So, yeah, we're going to, you know, and I think rightly the government said no because they realized that, you know, that would have been just turning the whole kit and caboodle over to these Nazis.
Am I right that they did fire some rockets into Mexico?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they Juarez, you know, and the Mexican government rightly protested. Why are you bombing us with your tank? And the other thing that's interesting is some of those V2s had cameras on them.
Oh.
So that they were taking pictures. And in many of those instances, the cameras, when they went out to look for, you know, the nose cone with the pictures, were gone.
Well, that's unbelievable.
So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, these Nazis are taking pictures of all of our defense
installations
and turning them over to whoever their contact is in Mexico. Right.
Bring them and bring those down to Argentina.
It's and like, bringing hey. Them down to Argentina, you know, who knows?
That it's is just, fascinating.
The whole thing is, you know, and they really don't even have to turn, you know, take all those pictures down to Argentina because Walter Schellenberg, of all people, turns over to Juan Perón in 1944, turns over to Juan Perón the entire German shortwave transmitting network from Argentina to Mexico.
Wow.
He turns all the, it was called the Bolivar Network. He turns all of that over to Juan Perón.
Incredible.
So Perone has got all of these secret shortwave transmitting stations. Yeah, you know, this, you can't make this stuff up.
It's amazing. You know, the untold aspect of the Kennedy assassination, Argentina, paperclip, and NASA with the UFO file.
It's huge. It's huge. Who, you know, who would believe an Antarctica connection to this? It's just nuts. And throw on top of that Nazis.
You know, it's interesting because D.H. Byrd, to clear his head after the assassination, he goes to Antarctica. He says, I've got to go down there.
Got to do some fishing.
I'll tell you another weird thing about D.H.
Shoot some penguins.
Our good friend, he goes down there in 65. Of course, he's the chairman of LTV, you know, as we know. Interesting thing about him when I was reading his autobiography, and I'm an Endangered Species, you know, that's what it's called. But what's he not?
Oh, the things I want to say, Daniel. Go ahead.
He does not mention once in there either the Kennedy assassination or that he owned the building.
Of course not.
Amazing.
Of course not.
In a television interview in 1973 where he is selling the building, he actually reenacts Oswald's supposed pose at the window with a rifle. This guy. And then he has taken the actual window from where the assassination supposedly took place and he hangs it in this living room.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah. D.H. Byrd. And this guy was a hunter. You know, he liked his hunting trophies. He's got them all over the place. So the Oswald windows is one of those trophies, as it were.
My word. So the window that's there now is not even the original window.
It's not. He grabbed it.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Because you've got the Malcolm Wallace fingerprint.
Oh, yes. Excellent point.
So D.H. Byrd is doing cover up for Lyndon Johnson. Getting Mac Wallace a fingerprint.
Let's take that whole window out. Come on.
Yeah, take the whole window.
And then his son comes out later and they're like, you know, the building is trying to get it back. The Texas School Book Depository. And he's like, no, that was one of my dad's favorite things. You know, I'm not giving it up.
No, they want to get that back so they can paint over the fingerprint. If the fingerprint's still there after all this time, probably not.
Good old Mac.
Yeah, good old Malcolm, on my word. I mean, it doesn't stop.
Incredible.
And they're still, I mean, the most laughable thing about all of this, Daniel, is they're still promoting this nonsense that Lee Harvey Oswald, number one, was anywhere near that window.
Yeah.
And number two, he acted alone.
Oh, my God. Honestly. The magic bullet. It's interesting. ABC News has a 60th anniversary JFK piece coming up.
Oh, dear.
And it's like, you know, what the world couldn't take in at the time is just Oswald, and he just wanted to do it because he hated that Kennedy, you know. Amazing.
They're literally coming out and repeating all that nonsense again.
Yes, it's pure Warren Commission for 2023 for the 60th anniversary. Indeed. And then we had the weird dance of the Secret Service guy saying, "Hey, I found this bullet," you know. Well, that's nice.
It's bullet from a 7.62 Mauser. Right. Exactly. Wrong bullet.
60 years later and no answers, honestly, Joseph. Honestly. No official answers.
Well, we've got lots of official answers. I mean, the fact of the matter is the government is now on record endorsing two entirely different narratives.
True.
Warren Commission narrative and the House Assassinations Committee narrative. And any way you slice the latter, it's a conspiracy.
Right.
Not a very wide one, but nevertheless, right. It's there.
Yes.
You know, so typical federal government put out two mutually exclusive and contradictory narrative to explain something you really don't want to explain at all.
Right. But don't worry, Hollywood has the solution.
You know, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play?
Hollywood has the solution, Joseph. They're putting out the movie Sam Giancana, He Assassinated Kennedy. And you know it's got
Sam Giancana?
Sam Giancana. And the movie is called Mafia Hit. Well, could you get any more obvious than that? I mean, this is...
Oh, come on, folks.
Give me a break. So that's their fallback position. They're like, oh, let's, you know.
Yeah, I see that. ABC runs the standard narrative, and Hollywood gets to take the mafia fallback. Oh, these people. I mean, could you guys please just attempt to be a little less transparent and give us something to do? I in researching some of the books I'm trying to research right now, you think the Kennedy assassination is bad? I've been digging into Lincoln.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
It's unreal. It's unreal, Daniel. And every time I read something new about that one, I'm thinking, all they had to do with Kennedy is go read this.
Wow. Yeah. You know,
it's that bad.
Including grabbing a fake John Wilkes Booth, right?
Oh, yeah.
Joseph, there was a scandal right over here near Harvard, mm-hmm. Just a few years ago, where they were trying to dig up the bones of this guy who they're like, we're sure it's John Wilkes Booth, but this was his, like, the identity he assumed after the fact. I don't know whatever happened or if they got to exhume the body.
The reason why there are all these John Wilkes Booths floating around out there, there was one in Oklahoma, in Enid, Oklahoma. There was the one in Harvard, and there were a couple of strange ones, if I recall correctly, one in Canada and one in Wales.
Wow.
I can tell you it's very possible that the person shot at the farm that they claim was John Wilkes Booth probably wasn't. The whole 4 years of Civil War has so much weirdness going on, and none of it. The more I dig, the more I'm convinced none of this makes sense. It's just, it's off the charts weird.
Incredible.
I mean, the Confederate Secretary of War ends up after the war in Great Britain as a barrister and a solicitor.
talking about connections.
Inner temple of the bar, no less. I mean,
whoa.
Yeah, whoa. Wait a minute here. Just all sorts of strangeness. And I can't even talk about the strangest thing of them all that I've noticed. And once I do tell people about it, if I'm able to put this book together and make a book out of what I've uncovered,
I would love for this to come out.
You have no idea how strange this is, Dan.
Oh, wow.
All I can say is, if you think the financial picture of World War II makes no sense, you ain't seen nothing.
Incredible.
Yeah, Joseph, this is weird.
My last question for you on the JFK side, what did Trump see in the records?
Excellent question. My guess is exactly what we've been talking. I think the more I think about it, Daniel, the more I think about, we had that strange release, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
He declassified some stuff, and lo and behold, we've got FBI files that are following Adolf Hitler around.
Yeah, right.
In Latin America. Okay.
Shades of Hitler in the 50s. Okay.
Yeah, shades of Hitler in the 50s, bouncing around Argentina. sunning himself butt naked on the beaches in Patagonia. But anyway, Yeah, it's just all this weird Hitler stuff comes out of the Trump JFK release. At the time I thought that was weird, and certainly part of corroboration of my Nazi International hypothesis. Mm-hmm. I now think of that as deliberate.
Oh, yeah.
I think he let that out deliberately.
Interesting.
And I think from his standpoint, it was a little bit of a warning mm-hmm. to other powers that be not to rock too much of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also a clue. I think he saw, pardon me, in a nutshell, I think he saw something connecting Antarctica and all of this UFO Kennedy assassination stuff and the Nazis. I think he saw something that tied it all together. And that was, I mean, when you say that, UFO, Nazis, Antarctica, and Kennedy assassination.
Yeah. You know, this is it.
Yeah. How do we rationalize a connection between those four very weird and seemingly totally disconnected things? How? Well, I think he saw something mm-hmm. like that. And when he's saying to Napolitano, I can't, you know, I think he means it. Who would believe it?
Exactly. It goes right to the ruling structure.
It goes right to the ruling structure.
And the wall of secrecy.
Right. Right.
As a matter of fact, in fact, if their major advantage in the deep state is the secrecy and the UFO file,
right?
You know, if the links to it are in what's left of the records, and we know some of them are the Garrison records, that's what's weird.
I'm gonna crawl way out on a twig here. In fact, no, I'm taking a nosedive off the end of the twig into the bottom of the canyon like Wile E. Coyote. I think it's very possible that what Trump found and could not let out is a connection between the continuity of government and all of these things, but in particular, a connection between continuity of government and this post-war Nazi International. Mm. That's what I think he may have found.
Interesting.
That's a whopper.
Yeah.
The whopper. That would rationalize the other things that we have been watching in the last few years, especially those things coming out of Russia. The whole business with Putin saying we need to denazify the Ukraine.
Right.
The whole business of Tatiana Korigina before 9/11 talking about a cabal with assets in excess of $300 trillion to play around with. The statement, the one that's the clincher for me, the statement of Sergei Glazyev in, I think it was Pravda, that said that our problem is not the Nazis in Kiev, it's the Nazis in Washington. Remember that one?
Yes. Yeah.
I think Trump may have seen something that puts all of that together.
Fascinating. That makes sense. It makes, you know, the only explanation.
Well, stop and look what we've got now.
Yeah.
We've got this barbaric attack against the Israelis. We've got an equally, in my opinion, an equally barbaric response.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got this nutcase crypto-Zionist Zelensky in the Ukraine, shutting down the Kievan Lavra. I mean, that Lavra is a monastery that's been there since the founding of Kiev and Russia, you know, pretty much. You know, imprisoning all these priests, nuns, and stuff. And we've got this war going on that they can't win with Russia, and this strange connection between Zelensky and Nazis, and, you know, what is this?
Wow.
You know, the way it looks to me is it looks like Nazi International playing big time here behind the scenes. It's the only way I can put it. It's the only way I can put it. And, you know, Trump, they would tip their hand. It would become too obvious if they were to try and assassinate him.
Yeah.
That would be, it would be way too risky.
No question.
So they've got to get rid of him.
They're trying other any way. Legal and, way that they
exactly.
can.
Exactly. They are trying everything.
Or I'd say every illegal way.
Every illegal way that they can.
But the raid then at Mar-a-Lago with the statement to Napolitano feels like there's something that he took with him in his possession that relates directly to
this. And they're looking for it, and they can't find it, and he's not telling them where he put it.
Bingo. Joseph, for the 2024 election, they have to deal with Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Donald Trump.
I like that. Bobby Kennedy Jr. And they don't dare off him either, because that would really tip the game away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Talk about that. So that's the situation they find themselves in. But don't worry, they've got Gavin Newsom as a backup in case.
Yeah. Yeah. Gavin
Newsom. Newsom.
Yeah. Let's go get our marching orders from Xi Jinping. I mean, honestly, it's just, no, I don't think Gruesome Newsom stands a chance.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I look at the Democratic bench and I can't see anyone on it.
No.
And oddly enough, Hillary doesn't seem like she wants the position anymore.
Yes, true.
She is oddly missing from the center of attention. True. You know, is she off getting measured for new barrel hoops? Who knows? I don't know. it's just unreal. So, you know, they've got Biden, and the last I heard, Mike Obama doesn't want the job, you know.
It's a strange situation.
It's totally strange. I mean, if we have an election, you know, they could be smart and they could just cave in and run Bobby.
You're right.
Know, they could exactly. they could do the obvious thing. But you know, I think they've got to be worried about that one too, because you know what he's going to do.
Oh yeah.
When he gets in the office.
Forget it. Yeah. He's independent now. It's like now he's a loose cannon.
Oh, look. If Bobby Kennedy were to get in there, he would do exactly what Trump should have done, and that's go sit himself down for about 3 weeks in the Department of Justice and give out pink papers.
Yes.
Yeah. No two ways about it.
I mean, the really,
I'd be cheering him on too. Let me tell you.
Well, the polls now are showing Trump pretty substantially ahead in the field. That has to have them thinking, you know, we have to do something with this guy. Again, they're face to face with someone on their level, which is the big problem that they have there.
They have, as far as I can tell, Daniel, they've boxed themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind that Biden Joe is in there by dint of massive election fraud. There's no doubt in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes him, in a certain sense, illegitimate. But he's illegitimate from the moral and ethical point of view.
Sure.
In addition to everything else. I mean, the man is just a plain disaster.
Oh, my God.
Debacle. You know, I'm thinking on a scale worse than Waterloo.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a Bonapartist. Anyway.
Total disaster.
It's just unreal. They've boxed themselves in. They cannot play the same the same scheme twice in order to get him in. Too many states have already tightened down their selection fraud laws anyway. And the other problem is they can't force him out of office. Then they've got to deal with Kamala, and no one wants the Ayatollah in charge. God. Because she's a blithering idiot, and she's not even senile. Right. You know? He at least has an excuse.
The old brain surgery.
Oh, she's just, you know, these word salads that she comes out with, and they're all tautologies. You know, there has to be an award for someone that can spin these Baroque, these elegant arabesques that do nothing.
Right. Joseph, how did she get through law school?
I have no idea.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's my question. How did this woman get through law school? You know, I've only said that about one other woman whose writings I had the opportunity to review, and I'm wondering, how did this person get a PhD? You know, I don't know. She, and who else do they have?
Not much.
The
Not
only much. Person of national stature in the Democratic Party that I can tell that might have some sort of muscle are people like Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer, and they yep. don't look like they're interested in the job. Not that I blame them, yep. but you know, they don't look like they're all that interested in the job. It's just nuts.
No, it is. It is. It's
makes no sense.
It's an incredible situation to go into it, and you feel like 2024, you have the election, you have yes. the threat, at least, of COG.
Yes.
Because of the war situation, they could say, oh, it's a cyber attack. We need to yeah. shut down the election. We'll just hang out.
Right. You know? We'll just hang out with martial law for a few years.
Right. Yeah. You remember that COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see them doing it. You know, yeah. I can see. But the problem is they may get away with it, but it's mm-hmm. risky because there's too much. Yeah. People are too fed up. You know, I think there's just too much ill will towards the government out there right now.
Absolutely.
I think it would be very risky. And all they would need is one South Carolina and one PTG Beauregard, and it's going to fly apart.
yeah.
And
yeah.
There's lots of PGT Beauregards out there right now.
So. It's amazing. The UFO file in 2024, uh-huh. the UFO threat is something they could use.
Oh, they could use a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I can see them dusting off the UFO threat.
Yeah.
Because they can't try the planned scamdemic. That ain't going to fly.
Mm-hmm.
If they try that, Fauci ends up in front of Congress and all the hearings are going to be televised. You
know? Yeah, right. No, that would be the end of him.
That would sure. be the end of him, and that would be Finally. The end of planned scamdemics. They can't try that. In other words, they've boxed themselves in. So, yeah, do they play the UFO card? Do they play the martial law? We're going to war with, well, pretty much everybody.
But, yeah. Right. You know. Oh, Iran attacked some village. We have to go after them.
We have to go bomb Iran into oblivion. You know, right.
These guys are getting every war in they can before he has to get out. That's what it feels like.
Well, yeah. I mean, Babylon Incredible. B came out with a satirical piece about Senator Graham Cracker. And basically the headline was Senator Graham Cracker says the United States should bomb everybody. You know, which is pretty much what he's saying lately. But I'm just like, okay, and then what? You know? When we've run out of bombs and the Russians still have a few on the shelf, right. then what are we going to do?
Hey, we're supposed to fight aliens together, you know?
Oh, yeah, right. You know, it's just, where is all this coming from? And, you know, it gets crazier every day, Daniel, so I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they'll pull the UFO card out. I don't know. You know, are we going to have an election? Everybody's wondering that, and what's the result going to be? Who knows?
You know, amazing, kind of rounds this whole conversation out in a way, but the Russians have withdrawn from President Kennedy's nuclear test ban
treaty. Yep.
So that's 60 years to unravel all the work that he did.
Well, here's the bad news, Daniel. Do you remember the last Russian atmospheric nuclear test? It was the Tsar Bomba.
Oh, yeah.
57 megatons.
Wow. Yes.
They let it off on Novaya Zemlya Island up in the Arctic Circle, and it rattled the windows in Norway.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was the last time the Russians tested a nuclear bomb in the atmosphere. And they weren't monkeying around, folks.
Oh,
they were
God.
Letting everybody yeah. know we can build them really big.
Right. The risks there are gigantic.
Oh, they're enormous. And, you know, the business that we would let that treaty lapse, especially at a time when Russia has hypersonic missiles that can be redirected in mid-flight and we don't.
Oh, right. Nice.
This is not exactly what I would call really good strategic planning.
Well, don't worry. You got General Van Herk at NORAD. You know, he can shoot down those UFOs. Don't worry about it. What is this guy doing? Jesus.
You know, one can only hope that Trump was right, that, you know, well, we've got other things than nuclear weapons, and they're really cool.
Yeah, right.
I certainly hope so. Because we might have 57 megaton bombs landing on top of us.
I know. The idea of how they've conducted themselves in regards to Russia is unbelievable. They just
it's off the charts nuts, yeah. Daniel.
There's no diplomacy
involved. This whole war in the Ukraine would have been avoidable had we listened to the Russians and not tried to get the Ukraine into the EU and NATO.
Yeah.
If we left it well enough alone, none of this would have happened.
Amazing.
So as far as I'm concerned, no, Mr. Putin is not to blame for this, folks. We are. The blame rests 100% in Swampington, D.C. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Wow.
And incredible. If they expect the Russians to roll over when Russians are being attacked by a bunch of Nazis.
Right. Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Not a good plan.
Not a good plan. No. It didn't work out too well the last time. So what makes them think it's going to work out good this time? It's nuts. It's
before
nuts.
They're done with it, they'll have wasted a million Ukrainians.
A million lives. They will, in addition to that, they will have absolutely denuded the country of most of its young population, its young male population.
Oh, right. Yes.
They are destroying the infrastructure. You know, how much worse can it get? I'm absolutely dumbfounded. And
wow.
It just boggles my mind. This country, my sister, my older sister is a very pious Roman Catholic. She's a very, very sweet woman. And she emailed me a couple days ago. And I never thought I would hear these kinds of words from my sister, but she just said, I am so ashamed of this country.
Mm.
And it's because of the Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, you know, all of this stuff going on. And, yeah. You know, I all I can do is agree with her. I none of this makes any sense.
Wow. Yeah.
Imagine Bibi Netanyahu doing what he's doing right now in Gaza. If we would have had any other president,
even
a shrub.
Yeah.
No way.
No way.
No way.
Yeah. It's literally one of the most dangerous periods ever.
Oh, yeah. Look, I lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis. I remember what that was like. I remember what that was like. This is much worse. This is much worse. And the reason it's worse is we've only got one mature statesman in any of the great powers on this planet, and that's Vladimir Putin. He's the only adult in the room.
Wow.
The only one.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah. It's the worst for us.
Yeah. You know, no one trusts Xi Jinping, rightfully, as far as they can throw him. And everybody else is a spoiled, rotten little, you know, pouting brat.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they got Jacinda Ardern. They got her out of New Zealand. But, you know, she's right over here at Harvard teaching a class.
Oh, wonderful. Class. She's right there close to her friend Hillary down at Columbia. Oh, joy. Yeah,
we get nothing but the best up here, Joseph, as you know.
Yeah, the Kiwi invasion, it has arrived. It's just unreal.
Joseph, it's great to see a fantastic
all right
information today, and the book is The Demon in the Acre. This is the one: Angels, Demons, Plasmas, Patristics, and Pyramids. It brings all of the Giza Death Star books around, and highly recommend it. Of course, everyone can go to GizaDeathStar.com. And we are going to see you soon for JFK's 60th anniversary.
Yep. Take it easy, Daniel. Thanks for having me back.
Great to see you, sir.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Joseph, just incredible. And we look forward to some great shows with you coming up in 2024. Of course, I mentioned lots of great surprises that are coming up for everyone watching the Dark Journalist series, including the documentary on Blue Enigma, a secret space program, and some remarkable special events, incredible interviews, and amazing episodes on the Hot Zone, Mystery Schools, the Deep State, and the UFO File. Thank you to everyone. And to become a member, of course, right there at darkjournalist.com. We look forward to being with you in 2024, and have a great holiday season.